tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 9th of February 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I went to the Patriotic Alternative protest on Saturday at Warwick. It was a great turnout of people, at least 100 people there supporting Patriotic Alternative. And then, of course, you had all the audience there from the market. There's some very good pictures from it, some good videos. We had our opponents there. And one thing that really sort of struck me about our opponents is that the things that they do is so offensive. They were shouting swear words through a megaphone. And you just think, anyone that's taken their children out to the market for the day, what are they going to think about that? And then you've got them attacking Patriotic Alternative, who are there basically protesting about children being raped and women being murdered by migrants, which have actually happened in that area. It was only the other week in the courthouse there that Rhiannon White's murderer was found guilty. Of course, she was the lady that was working at one of these migrant hotels, and she was brutally stabbed to death with a screwdriver dozens of times on a railway platform. And the case was literally held at Warwick Crown Court. And you've then got Patriotic Alternative protesting about those sorts of things and saying you need to deport all the illegal immigrants before any more of these atrocities happen. And then you've got the left protesting against the people complaining about that. I mean, how do they think that looks to the people there, the general people from Warwick? And of course, Patriotic Alternative have a policy of just flying the country's flags, the United Kingdom's flags. So there are all these England flags, a Scottish flag there. I had my Welsh flag there. Joe Marsh was there with an O England Dur flag. So you've got one side which is waving the flags of the country and not swearing and generally just ignoring the people on the left. And the people on the left are calling the people waving the flags of the country Nazis and the far right. I mean, again, how does that look to the general public? And they then start their chant about how it's their streets. Well, I think the streets actually belong to the people that are holding the country's flags. They belong to the country. And they really just make very good propaganda for us, I think, when the general public see these people. It was very good to meet up with people that I hadn't seen for a long time. Tony from the media team at PA. I also saw a chap that I hadn't seen since the days of the Yorkshire Forum. I recognised him, and he was very generous, gave us a donation towards Radio Albion. And I must say thank you to him for that. I won't actually say his name on here because I'm sure he would rather remain anonymous. And it was good to see Mark there, Laura there, and Steve Laws. And Steve Laws was walking into the protest, and unfortunately he had to make his way through the left-wing opponents, and they tried to attack him and the people he had with him. He had women with him, and they tried to attack these women. I mean, that's the sort of people that our opponents are. They're violent. You know, if it goes over your head when you see their signs talking about smash the Nazis, punch a Nazi, smash the far right, all of this violent imagery they are violent people. They're really just horrible people. I think it's quite obvious to general onlookers who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in that. So it was a very good protest. We will have the stream that was produced last night with Steve Laws, Laura Taylor and Mark Collette on it. We'll have it here on Radio Albion later on today. But today I wanted to talk about something different to that. I wanted to talk about what's going on in Wales, who have announced that they want to be an anti-racist country. And this comes on top of them saying that they were a sanctuary nation, meaning that Wales wanted to welcome as many illegal immigrants as possible. That's what it means to be a sanctuary nation. And of course, they haven't asked any of the Welsh people about this. They haven't said to the Welsh people, would you be happy giving up your council houses to illegal immigrants? Because I'm sure the Welsh people would say no. And indeed, there are lots of protests against that happening all over Wales. And a couple of years back, Wales pledged its support to the Black Lives Matter movement. And ever since then, they've been putting Black Lives Matter imagery and posters up at all the Welsh heritage sites. There's one outside Cardiff, which is Faggins, something like that, I think it's called. And it basically has all these old housing, the old way that the Welsh used to live. And they've even got a Black Lives Matter stall there, trying to insert black people into Welsh history. And of course, there were some black people in Wales, a very, very small number, after the First World War. And they had a riot and there was shootings. And there's a very good documentary on that that was produced by Bill Etheling from PA Wales. But what they're doing now is they've just spent an awful amount of money on setting up I guess it's the equivalent of the Prevent Anti-Extremism game, which I believe has now actually been taken away from the public. You can't see that anymore since the characters in the game became meme characters and were turned into being supportive of nationalism rather than being against. Well, the Welsh government has just invested more than £1.2 million in a virtual reality educational platform designed to lecture students about white privilege. And I'm taking this from GB News. I mean, that's a huge amount of money to put into this. And I tried to have a go at this myself, but the software, the technology really wasn't good enough. It kept crashing. So I wasn't able to actually get in there and have a good look. But I'm sure you all know what it's likely to be about, this myth of white privilege. It's just that white people are born with privilege. That's why we built a civilization. And people like Africans weren't able to build a civilization. That was just because we were racist to them. And we have this mythical privilege, which denies the fact that the most underprivileged people in Britain are the white working class. And anytime anybody tries to do anything for the white working class, they get accused of racism. It was only a couple of years back that Stormzy set up a black scholarship fund. I believe he put £1 million in there, possibly more than £1 million, which was designed to help black students and to get them into Oxford University. And Oxford University were very pleased about this, and there was lots of support for it in the media. And then there was a white philanthropist who wanted to set up a white scholarship fund for these underprivileged white boys, and every university turned him down because they were frightened that they would be called racist. And yet when you look at the statistics, it is the white working class that are underrepresented at these universities, not necessarily black people. There are a percentage of black people that are at these universities. And don't forget, there are all these grants and financial help and extra tuition available for black people to get them into university. But for the white working class, there is nothing at all. And this is really back to front, because white people have an average IQ of 100. Black Westerners, black people that live in Western countries, they have an average IQ of 85. Black Africans have an average IQ of 70. So whether you are going to say that black people have an IQ of 70 or 85, the average IQ of white people is 100. So the money is going to be best spent on educating the people with the average IQ of 100, not educating the people with an IQ of 85, because the best they're going to be able to do by raising that is up to about 95. They're not going to be to the standard of even being school teachers at that level. Whereas if you invest in education and give better education to somebody with an average IQ of 100, then they're going to be able to raise that by 10 points, 10, 15 points to 110, 115. So you're going to get the best benefit for your money from the brightest people. So rather than helping the brightest people, we actually help the least bright people. And then we tell the bright people that aren't actually getting any help, we tell them that they have white privilege. So they don't need any help because they have white privilege. Well, described as the world's first anti-racist virtual world, the immersive 3D environment has been deployed in colleges across Wales for pupils aged 16 and above since 2024. Students navigate through a digital space featuring a central atrium decorated with portraits of civil rights figures, including Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, and Betty Campbell. I'm pleased they got Malcolm X there. I mean, Malcolm X was a good black nationalist. He was supportive of blacks being independent and doing things for themselves, as opposed to people like Martin Luther King, who didn't want black people to be doing things for themselves. He wanted black people to be living among white people. That's the same with Nelson Mandela. I don't think very much of Nelson Mandela. He used violence. He actually set bombs off in order to try and achieve his political aims. So he was a terrorist. So I don't think it's good to be promoting Nelson Mandela. But if you are going to be promoting figures to blacks, then Malcolm X is a very good figure, and also Marcus Garvey. But why would you be doing that in Wales when black people probably only make up about 1% of the population in Wales? The platform contains interactive lessons covering black feminism and decolonizing politics, with one section examining sociology through an anti-racist lens. What does decolonizing anything mean? Well, it means removing white people from it. Decolonizing politics means removing white people from politics. I guess you could say that would mean things like promoting David Lammy. David Lammy gets a bit of a hard time of it from nationalists, white nationalists, that is, and I don't think that's quite right. I mean, okay, he might say negative things about white people, but why would you expect him to say positive things about white people? I guess you could say, well, because we've allowed him to be a politician, we've allowed him into a leadership role in Britain, and that's a fair comment. But you would expect David Lammy to be all about doing whatever he can do for black people. You would expect him to be ethnocentric, and he is very ethnocentric, and that's why I say I'm not very critical of him, because I think he has a healthy sense of ethnocentrism for his black people, and he does his best for his black people. The problem isn't with blacks and non-whites not being ethnocentric. The problem is with white people not being ethnocentric. And when somebody white does show their ethnocentrism, they get accused of being racist. That's the problem there. So I actually have quite a bit of respect for David Lammy to have got into the position that he is in. And I think we can use him as an example of, look, that is somebody who does their best for black people. Why is it that when we try to do our best for white people, we get accused of being racist? Black feminism, I don't know much about that. Feminism has always been Jewish rather than black. I mean, and what I mean by that is there's a disproportionate Jewish influence in feminism. Sociology through an anti-racist lens, that basically means blaming racism for everything. As I pointed out earlier, we have different average IQs, and there is nothing better than IQ for predicting life outcomes. So if you have a lower IQ, You are going to have less control over your emotions. You're going to be more prone to ending up in prison. You're going to have difficulty holding down a job, difficulty organizing your life. And these are the reasons why people have difficulty with these things, is because they have a low IQ. And obviously, if you're a black person and you have a lower IQ than white people, you're going to have issues with those things. It's not because white people are being racist towards you. I mean, we see the same problems in Africa, that where there isn't any racism, because Africa is just full of black people. We see the same problems there, the same criminality, the same problems with criminality. I mean, we often talk about black criminals, but there's also the black victims. It's the black people that have to live among the black criminals that have the worst time of it, because they have to live among them. So it's not as if it just harms white people to have a high criminality among blacks. It harms a lot of black people. And that's not because of racism. That's, as I say, it's because they're a different group and they have a different average IQ. But the whole point of this is just to blame white people and to get white people to feel guilty for the things that they have created and for their successes. It also explores how whiteness manifests in language, policies, and research, and how privilege affects social, educational, and workplace settings. And of course, if you turn that round the other way, imagine if we were saying we'd like to explore how blackness manifests in language, policies, and research. We would be accused of being racist, of course. Because what they're talking about here when they say whiteness, they mean it in a negative way. They want to eliminate whiteness, which sounds genocidal. But of course, they would say, well, what we really mean is just eliminating a way of thinking, a white way of thinking. Well, as I pointed out, white people have a higher average IQ. That's why white people think in the way they do. That's why they think differently to these other groups. And the differences between these racial groups, it isn't just IQ. There's much more than that. There's character involved. There's emotion involved. There's all sorts of differences that you can actually measure on statistics. And it's not that white people just have this privilege, and that's why we have the systems that we have. It's because we created these systems, because that's what we do naturally. And I don't understand why we imagine that everybody else in the world is going to find working with our systems as easy as we find it. They're different people groups. They didn't create these systems, which means it is not natural for them to function within them. And of course, that's when they get these problems. Among the key terms students are encouraged to learn are patriarchy and imperialism, alongside the concept of white privilege, which the platform defines as inherent advantages possessed by a white person, which means that during their day-to-day life, they do not have to consider their race. But as soon as we do start considering our race, we get told we're racist. As soon as we start saying, well, actually, we have things that are in the best interests of our race and things that are in the worst interests of it, then you're accused of being racist. And of course, they say here patriarchy, they're obviously against the patriarchy, even though it's the patriarchy that produced this civilization. They say they're against imperialism. Whereas if it wasn't for imperialism, we wouldn't even have these non-whites in our countries. They wouldn't have access to civilization. They would still be out in the non-white countries, and they'd still be only making up 20% of the population of the world. I mean, one thing that people don't seem to understand is that just 100 years ago, white people made up 40% of the world's population. If you go back 200 years, white people probably made up about 80% of the world's population. All this massive increase in non-whites and this diminution of the white birth rate and the actual figures of white people, the percentage of white people, all of that has happened in the last couple of centuries because of the advances that white people have made in medicine and technology. And we've shared these things. We've shared these gifts of civilization with these other people groups. And the result of that is that they've massively increased in population. And if it wasn't for us sharing the fruits of civilization with them, they would still be the minority in the world. I listened to Jared Taylor's podcast, and the increase in numbers from Somalia, from 1990 just to 2025 is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. They haven't just doubled in number, they've quadrupled in number. I can't think of the exact numbers, but it's just an incredible explosion in birth rate that has been caused by America sharing its civilization with Somalia. And if you look at that massive increase in birth rate, you realize that you only have to go back a couple of hundred years and white people would have been the majority in the world. And it's only because of our sharing civilization with these groups that they now make up such a high percentage. One room in the Metaverse platform is devoted to a world timeline designed to teach pupils about colonialism and the intertwined histories of Europe, Africa, and India. Of course, they see colonialism as a bad thing. But colonialism in Africa, the only reason Africa was colonized was to put a stop to the slave trade. We did a Greatest Britain's podcast on David Livingstone. David Livingstone, the great anti-slavery campaigner. And he said, the only way that you're going to get rid of slavery in Africa is if you create facilities there so that the Africans can create other merchandise other than selling each other, such as cotton, textiles, clothing, mining. We need to colonize this area so that we can build towns and cities and ports. And once we have those, then the Africans can trade in other things that they can create rather than having to just trade in other Africans. So the whole point of colonialism in Africa was to put a stop to slavery. And yet we're told today that colonialism and imperialism is a bad thing. Within the India section, the Bengal famine of 1770 is explicitly compared to the Holocaust. Oh, anti-Semitism there. Although partly down to weather conditions and droughts, most historians agree that the vast loss of life was directly down to the policies of the British. A narrator states, during the famine of 1770, the agricultural tax was increased from 10% under the Mughals to 50% under the British East India Company, leading to the loss of 10 million lives in Bengal, equivalent to the Black Death in Europe, or the Holocaust, the platform preaches. And I'm not going to make excuses for the British East India Company. That was the organisation that was making the money out of imperialism. But I would say that the agricultural know-how of the West is superior to the agricultural know-how of the global South and places like India. So it may be that British East India Company had provided the seeds and the know-how on how to grow this, or they may have given them the land on which they could grow these crops. They may have purchased the land or taken over the land in some way. So it may be that they had a right to charge whatever they wanted in tax. That, of course, the loss of so many people is a dreadful thing, but we didn't just do these things to black people. We also did it in Ireland with the potato famine. I mean, these are negative things, but I don't believe they are things that we should be angry at today's white people for, because it was a different world back then. And it had different morals. And for a start, life and death was far more close up, and people would see people die all the time. There was infant mortality, for instance. Pretty much every family would have had children, babies that had actually died. You would be used to seeing quite a lot of death. So saying that 10 million lives were lost in Bengal, as it says here, there were 10 million lives were lost in the Black Death in Europe. We had these tragedies throughout history, but I don't think we can really hold racial groups responsible for them. The metaverse also prevents various strands of feminist thought, including psychoanalytical feminism, a 1970s theory which draws on the work of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud has been discredited. I mean, all his stuff has been discredited. And you should, all you have to do is listen to Dr. E. Michael Jones on Sigmund Freud to learn about that. And yet they're still promoting his ideas. Jung was far more accurate in what he said than Sigmund Freud. They were two competing ideas about how the subconscious works. The platform describes this psychoanalytical feminism as a theory of oppression that asserts that men have an inherent psychological need to subjugate women. Well, it seems to me, possibly, women might have an inherent psychological need to be dominated by men. I mean, that might be just as reasonable as this idea that men have a need to subjugate women. I mean, women are the weaker sex, for a start. They need men to protect them. And in order to be able to protect them, they would also need to be able to dominate them in order to protect them. So this theory here that men need to subjugate women, men are more likely to put women on a pedestal if they're not told any different, and they will worship a woman as if she's some kind of goddess. And of course, then the woman has no boundaries whatsoever and can cause all sorts of problems for herself and for the people around her. You know, the old tradition was that the woman should obey the man and the man should obey God and the children should obey the woman. So there was a clear hierarchy there. And I don't think it was about domination and subjugation. It was just about a natural hierarchy. All of these ideas, they ignore natural law and they ignore what we see in the natural world. It's as if mankind is somehow above nature. Of course, it's not above nature. We should be looking to nature to see the way that our society should be compartmentalized, but we don't. We come up with these ideas to blame men for everything. And of course, men are to blame in one way, because men run everything, and whatever these problems that have been caused by feminism, they could never have started if it wasn't for men allowing these things to happen. But feminism in itself, this idea of reversing what's in nature and claiming that both the sexes are equal when they're both patently different to one another, that is something which has caused all sorts of problems in society. We've only had feminism for 100 years and already our birth rate has dropped to almost half of what it should be. If we have feminism for another 100 years, we won't have any white people left in the world, and the world will just collapse back into savagery, because you can't have the mothers of your children going out to work. They need to be raising children. They need to be raising the next generation. If they're not raising the next generation, then you die out. So feminism is a suicidal ideology. They have to come out with all these clever ways to sustain it. And of course, that's what it says in the Bible, that the clever people will be made fools of. And they are being made fools of. If you're coming out with ideas that are harmful to the group, they might not be harmful to the individual, it might be helpful for the individual, but if they're harmful for the group, then you're destroying everything that you require in order to live. It adds, this branch of feminism seeks to gain insight into how our psychic lives develop in order to better understand and change women's oppression. So it starts out from a basis that women are being oppressed by men. Women weren't oppressed by men. Women never even used to have to work. Men used to provide everything for women. A woman could stay in the home. She could learn whatever she wanted to learn. All she had to do was raise the children, have some dinner on by the time that the husband came home, and keep the place tidy. And that was it. That was all she had to do, was just look after the man. And she was given all her housekeeper money. And she had all these children. And she had all these grandchildren. Nowadays, women go and do the same for an employer. Instead of doing this for somebody who loves them, they do this just for somebody in exchange for money. And if they do that instead of having children, they have no grandchildren to make themselves happy when they get older, and they become very bitter. And it's because they've turned their back against nature and gone for this idea of feminism, which claims that women are being oppressed. How is it oppressive to not have to actually work and to be able to live at home and raise children? What's oppressive is what's happening now, forcing women to work. But we've talked women into this. We've allowed this to happen. Men have allowed feminism to happen. And feminism itself is what's suppressing women. The curriculum further contends that feminism remains insufficiently taught in schools, attributing this partly to patriarchal influence over conventional education. Well, again, educating of children has always been a women's role. As I just said, the natural hierarchy is the woman obeys the man and the children obey the woman. And that's the patriarchal idea. So how can they say that it's a patriarchal influence over conventional education when conventional education would be the woman teaching the child? So they can't have this, both ways. And to say that it's insufficiently taught in schools, it's absolutely everywhere. The platform had labelled a campaign leaflet by former Wales Secretary David T.C. Davies as an example of dog whistling over his calls for greater consultation on traveller site developments. References to Mr. Davies were subsequently removed following media inquiries reported to the Telegraph. I mean, that's really overtly political, which you're not supposed to do in education. You're not supposed to try to politicise the students, and that's very overt if they're criticising a politician in it. But all of this is trying to politicise the students. All of it is trying to inculcate in them these left-wing ideas. Elsewhere in the virtual space, a billboard shows a leaflet circulated in 2022 as part of a collaborative campaign to prevent Jimmy Carr performing in Wales following a controversy over anti-gypsy remarks in one of his Netflix shows. So they're trying to encourage you to support this idea of silencing people for making jokes that the state doesn't agree with. The initiative forms part of Wales's broader anti-racist action plan unveiled in 2022, which aims to make the nation the world's first anti-racist country by 2030. And that, again, that's extreme left-wing. It's like the anti-racist baby book. What it's trying to say there is it wants to make the country the first 100% self-hating country in the world, because that's what being anti-racist means. Anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white. So it's saying they want to make Wales completely anti-white. They want to make the Welsh people hate the Welsh people. That's the general idea behind this. An official report underpinning the strategy identified deeply rooted racial inequalities experienced by Black, Asian and minority ethnic people in Wales. Of course there are going to be inequalities, because Black and minority ethnic people only make up about 5% as a total of the people in Wales. Of course there's going to be inequalities. They make up a tiny, tiny minority. You can't say that we should be doing everything for this tiny minority rather than doing what the majority want, but that's effectively what the Wales leadership are deciding to do. It states that ethnic minority people are disproportionately disadvantaged at nearly every level of the system. Well, yes, because they are disproportionate in the demographics of Wales. They only make up 5% of the population in Wales. That's why they're disadvantaged, is because there aren't very many of them here. Why should the Welsh people have to change everything for this small minority of people? That's what's wrong. What, you wouldn't do that in any other country in the world, would you? You wouldn't say that India needs to become more Japanese, and that the tiny percentage of Japanese in India are being disproportionately disadvantaged by India's system. I mean, you could say that somebody is disadvantaged if they don't speak Welsh or they don't speak English. Well, if you don't speak Welsh or English and you live in Wales, well, that's your problem, isn't it? It's not that the English and the Welsh are discriminating against you because they haven't learnt to speak your language. You're living in their country. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Conservative Party Chairman Kevin Hollenrake condemned the project, describing the use of political campaign material within the platform as outrageous and tantamount to accusing MPs of racism. I think the whole idea of whiteness and white privilege accuses all white people of racism. He said hard-pressed Welsh taxpayers will be disgusted to know that Welsh Labour are spending their cash on this kind of nonsense. It is also outrageous that the Welsh Government is using state funding to support attacks on other parties' MPs, accusing them of racism just for standing up for their constituents. Well, that's what racism means now, doesn't it? If you're a white person and you're concerned about other white people, then you are racist. I mean, they're the ones that have defined what the word means. And yes, it does mean standing up for your constituents. If you're a Welsh person and you're standing up for Welsh people, you're going to be accused of being racist. And that's exactly what they mean by the word racism. You can only be racist if you're white. Mr. Hollingrake declared that the woke metaverse demonstrated that Welsh Labour was living in a virtual reality. The Welsh government defended its investment with a spokesman saying, "We have invested £1.2 million in the further education curriculum for anti-racism since 2022. This pioneering project has delivered overwhelmingly positive outcomes and reflects our commitments to an anti-racist Wales, as well as reflecting similar offers within English institutions." And it's not specifically Wales that are doing this. In England, it's just as anti-white as it is in Wales. But Wales does seem to just tip the scales slightly, I think, towards being more anti-white. As I say, because they say that they want to be an anti-racist country, which effectively means they want to be an anti-white country. The world's first anti-white white country is what they wish to turn Wales into. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.